The Church of God, the Eternal, presents Blessing versus Chance, a message given by Mr. John Brisby in Eugene, Oregon, December 2nd, 2023.
I've had this topic in mind for a while and finally decided to turn it into some notes, to turn it into a sermon, and this afternoon is the day for that. My question for you is, what can we know about the topic of luck? Now, it comes up especially in concerns about how we speak, good luck, bad luck, and all the associated words, including fate, fortune, chance, and all of this. And so, and certainly I remember a few comments that Mr. Raymond Cole made many years ago, just kind of in passing, and I'll address some of that. But I thought, it would be probably beneficial to all of us just to do a little bit of a study on what the Bible has to say about this topic of luck. I've actually entitled this sermon, Blessing versus Chance. So I'm going to talk about chance because chance is the English word translated in the Old Testament. So let's start in Ecclesiastes 9 verse 11 because here's where we find it. We want to understand the principles concerning luck, if it exists and in what way it does, chance, fortune, and how that contrasts with the idea of a blessing. And I'll ask it in terms of, now we think of in terms of blessing from God, because that's where blessings come from, right? Yes, the only place that blessing comes from is God. But blessing implies, correctly, an act of God to intervene, to do something. So that if you're blessed, now you have received the intervention of God in a very direct way, or an indirect way. Nevertheless, you got something as a special gift from God by a blessing. So we want to contrast that to the idea of things that happen that aren't associated with the volition of God to create a blessing. And what do we call that? Well, the Bible calls it chance. So let's read it in Ecclesiastes 9, verses 11. Solomon was inspired to write, I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, neither yet bread to the wise, nor yet riches to men of understanding, nor yet favor to men of skill, but time and chance happeneth to them all. Time and chance happeneth to them all. And let me first start by clarifying, this isn't Solomon speaking by his carnal nature that God just allowed to be published in the Bible. No, Solomon was inspired by God to write the words of God. So these are God's words through the king, not his own. But I think some can have a natural conundrum on that fact because the book of Ecclesiastes seems to reflect the thinking of a man. No, God inspired the book of Ecclesiastes. But again, to put this into context, remember, Solomon was inspired by God to write concerning the futility of human existence without something beyond. So Solomon is writing from the standpoint of what's the best you can achieve in this physical existence as a flesh and blood human being if there is no hope for a reward beyond. And that's why it speaks of the futility of human existence, vanity and vexation of spirit. No matter what you achieve, no matter how much you accomplish, the end result, vanity and vexation of spirits, a lack of satisfaction is the end result, no matter what you achieve physically in the world. Well, this principle is separate but connected to it because here we also find, and this is speaking in terms of the unconverted, because that's again what Solomon is describing, and it says very favorably here, or very specifically here, if you think it's all about doing the right things at the right time, that you can plan this out, if you're the smarter, if you're the wiser, if you're whatever else, that you can kind of be assured of getting a better result. In other words, you can earn a better result. And yet what Solomon is saying is, regardless of all of that, doesn't matter how smart you are, how wise you are, whatever else, but time and chance happeneth to them all. Time and chance. So what is this? Well, I'm not going to do a deep dive on a word study, but the Hebrew word here is pega, P-E-G-A. And it means, besides chance, a current and a casual impact. Okay, but how does that help us? What does it mean? Well, the inference really is accurate for what we call in the English chance, which is an occurrence which isn't associated with a divine intervention or a planned event by some other being, either flesh or spirit. It's just something that happened accidentally or coincidentally. That's what this word chance is speaking about. And Solomon confirmed for God, time and chance happens to them all. And this is related to also the English word concept of luck. Because when we talk about a definition of luck or chance, I'm going to give you that in just a moment, we are talking about something that occurs accidentally, without plan or purpose by any individual. It's just an occurrence. And that's what luck means. Now, some of you are conditioned not to use the word luck. Oh, well, luck is pagan. Well, we're going to get into the conundrum over language, because we have to have a way to talk about things that occur that aren't according to the plan of man or God. And if blessing is specifically something that happens by the volition of God, what do you call it when God permits something to happen where he didn't put his finger or his thumb on the scale? Because this says right here, time and chance does happen to humanity. So chance is an issue. It is a thing. But we need, as the people of God, to put this into context. How does that apply to you and me who are the called of God as opposed to the uncalled of the world? Oh yeah, there is a big difference. So we're going to look at all of that. What is the let's turn first to one other use of this word pega. 1 Kings 5, verse 3 through 4. 1 Kings 5, verses 3 through 4, just to give you a way to see the use of the word when it's not, it's the same word, but it's not translated in English as chance. 1 Kings 5, beginning in verse 3, "Thou knowest how that David, my father, could not build an house unto the name of the Eternal his God for the wars which were about him on every side until the Eternal put them under the soles of his feet." So Solomon is saying here, one of the things that prevented King David from building the temple, besides ultimately we know God told him he wasn't going to let him build it. But Solomon is confirming here that one of the other factors that prevented David from building it is that most of his life was embroiled in wars. How could he devote his time and energy, himself and the people, to the construction of this great building when instead he spent most of his time just defending his borders, trying to vanquish enemies that were trying to destroy Israel? So his life was steeped in wars. God called him a bloody man, and he fulfilled the will of God, and yet that was David's lot in life, if you will, by God's design. So peace was not granted to Israel, for the most part, during the life of David, but it was in the life of his son Solomon. And it was under the reign of Solomon that first temple, that great temple, was finally built. So what David is confirming here is that David wanted to but couldn't do it because he didn't have time to build a building. Then verse 4, "But now the Eternal my God hath given me rest on every side, so that there is neither adversary nor evil occurrent." And guess where the word pega is? It's this phrase, evil occurrent. Now, the pega is the word occurrent. The evil is a modifier. And so what we're talking about here is, by use of this word, Because Solomon later, when he wrote Ecclesiastes through the Holy Spirit, said time and chance happens to all humanity. Now he's saying he enjoyed a peaceful reign after his father died, where there was neither adversary nor bad luck. That's in essence what he's saying, because he is not, by use of this word, he is not referring to the action or the inaction of God. He's not speaking up. Now, it was a blessing. The reign of Solomon and the peace that he was given absolutely was a blessing compared to that that his father experienced. But what Solomon is choosing to reference here, likewise by the Holy Spirit, is not God's role in it, but just the fact as it was experienced on the earth and in his realm. So he's just referring to it without referring to a cause. And he's saying there was no, in essence, there was no evil occurrence or proclivity surrounding him that prevented him from being able to build the temple, which is why he was able to do it. Now, further beyond, it was by God's intervention that he had this positive environment that allowed him to build the temple. But what I'm trying to point out here is the word used here does not in and of itself refer to either the act of God to bless or to curse. God's blessing or cursings are involved, but that wasn't the point Solomon was inspired to write here. He was just saying he was blessed with a peaceful environment. Well, I say he had a peaceful environment without referring to God. That's the use of the word. Okay, so we are talking about this concept of chance. What is it? Well, in the English, you just go to a dictionary definition, you'll get something like this. Here's a two-part definition of the English word chance. Number one, something that happens unpredictably without discernible human intention or observable cause. And then the elaboration on that point two is chance is defined as the assumed impersonal, purposeless determiner of unaccountable happenings. That's a mouthful. The assumed impersonal, purposeless determiner of unaccountable happenings, otherwise called luck. And that's really mostly how we use the word luck. And we use it in either saying good luck or bad luck, don't we? And when we use that, we're referring to an instance of something that happens. We don't attribute it to the intention or the plan or the purpose either of man or God. It's just something that occurred. And then we also modify it by saying it's either something good that happened or something that bad that happened. Another way to say that is good luck or bad luck. Is that evil? Is that something God's people shouldn't say? I'm going to say no. Because, again, we're talking the other word, the synonym for luck is chance. A chance happening is another description of an event that occurs without the intervention of anyone, God or man. It's something that takes place by chance. And it's either something we like or something we don't like. It's either a good event or a negative event. We can call it good chance or bad chance, or you can call it good luck or bad luck. Same thing. I find it interesting in the French, they actually would say bon chance. And the word chance actually converts to luck. At least that's what I'm learning. So those are used as synonyms, chance and luck. I don't find that there's anything wrong with using the word luck if you're using it correctly. The people of God, however, need to be careful that we're not ascribing to luck something that really has the hand of God in it, and that's where we just have to be careful with our choices. But the word luck by itself or chance is not in and of itself bad. So what are we going to say about luck or chance? Same thing. in relationship to blessing, which is the volition of God specifically to intervene and to prevent something good. Now, well, I would say, or I could say blessing or cursing, because cursing is the antithesis of the action of God to provide something good would be God providing something negative for reason. So you call that blessing or cursing, and how does that compare to dumb luck? That's another way that we as Americans, we refer to it as dumb luck, don't we? Meaning that just as an emphasis to the fact that somebody didn't do it, plan it, it just happened. There's no cause attributed to a sentient being, God or man. It's just an event that took place. So how do you and I as members of God's church then put those principles into context? Again, Ecclesiastes 9:11 said it's real. Time and chance happens to them all. So what can we learn about that? First, let's make this point. The called of God are not subject to chance, to dumb luck. If you are called by God with an open mind to understand His truth and called, become a member of the first fruits of His harvest right now, all of this concept about luck and chance goes out the window for you. Let me just make that clear in case anybody was worried. You are not subject. And this happened to have been a topic that I cared much about when I was young. As a teenager, as a later teenager, when I first came into Church of God the Eternal and first started having deep conversations with Raymond Cole, which it didn't happen very often, but when it did, this was one of those things I brought up. Because as a young person who was not baptized, who was raised with the knowledge of God's truth, which I thought was real, but I still had this question. Why does everybody in the church want to ascribe everything to God? God either blessed or God cursed. Isn't it possible? And in one way or another, this is the question I asked Mr. Cole, because I had my own theory about it, and I was trying to sell him on it. Isn't it possible that certain things happen that aren't because God intervened to bless or to curse? They just happen by chance. Isn't chance a real thing? And can't that be a possible explanation for certain things that happen to God's people? I remember Mr. Cole, as he always did, he just smiled. And then he politely corrected me. And his reply was basically, probably in a lot of words, because he used a lot of words, was that no, for the world, yes, that is possible, but for ones who are called by God, it's not time and chance. You cease to be affected just by dumb luck when God taps you on the shoulder and reveals to you His truth. Because see, that was informing a lot of things, you know, and how I would interpret, you know, well, certain actions that I take, oh, was that a curse from God or was that just dumb luck? Was that just bad luck? Am I really inclined to have to find a reason to say that God is like, let something bad happen to me or I brought something bad upon myself, that He's in essence correcting me? Or is this an instance where, hey, I was just in the wrong place at the wrong time? God's not involved in it one way or the other. It just happened. And basically, He was telling me, for you, no. So let's notice at least some biblical support for that. Romans 8, verse 28 through 30. One of these controversial passages interpreted and reinterpreted and misinterpreted by most of the Worldwide Church of God ministry in the 1970s. But here we're talking about the concept of predestination. And I'm not going to run into that rabbit hole during this sermon, but I want to touch on it. Romans 8, verse 28, and we know, the Apostle Paul was inspired to write, that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to His purpose. So God calls us, and therefore there is a purpose behind it when He does call. Verse 29, for whom He did foreknow. He foreknew someone. What does that mean? He also did predestinate to be conformed to the image of his Son, that he might be the firstborn among many brethren. Moreover, verse 30, whom he did predestinate, them he also called, and whom he called, them he also justified, and whom he justified, them he also glorified. The short answer, because I'm not getting into this big debate on predestination, Mr. Armstrong said simply, wrote simply, in the early years of the church, and it still bears out to be absolutely true, God did not predestinate us to either be saved or lost, which is the concept in a lot of false Christian churches, Catholics and others. We are not predestined, predetermined, either to be saved or lost. You were predestined by God to be called at a certain time. That's what he predestined, the time of the calling of every human being. And as a part of the New Testament church right now, then God knew you from the foundation of the world as he knew every human being who had ever been born, because he knows the end from the beginning. And he knew exactly when they would be born, what they would do, and at what point in their life they would intervene. He would intervene in order to offer them a chance for salvation. So that's the short answer to what this predestination is. But I'm trying to make the point. Then when you're called, all of a sudden, it's like God takes an incredible interest in your life. Unlike the people of the world who, for the most part, he is allowing to go about their business hands off, to live and to die and to do all of their activities. They don't have saving knowledge, and God is not working with them yet to give them their chance at salvation. They will have it, but not now. For the most part, it's God is hands off, which means what they are experiencing is exactly what Solomon described. Time and chance. Time and chance is what they're experiencing. When you're called, however, then all of a sudden, now you are a student under the tutelage of Jesus Christ. And God is taking an active interest and participation in your life. You cease to be at the whim of luck. So there is a difference between the called and those who are not yet called. That's the difference. Matthew 10, verse 28. Matthew 10, verse 28, and fear not them which kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul, but rather fear him which is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. And we're talking about the power of God, who determines who lives and who dies, ultimately who is born into the family of God and who goes to sleep forever. Verse 29, are not two sparrows sold for a farthing, and one of them shall not fall on the ground without your Father? So what Jesus Christ is emphasizing here is that even things that are happening in the natural world, the animal kingdom, the birds, God is involved in it. He's the creator and the sustainer of everything that exists in heaven and earth and everything which is taking part. Does he intervene? Is he absolutely manipulating every single thing? No, many of the things he has created actually work on autopilot. But they happen with his knowledge and his understanding, and because an attribute of God is this idea of omniscience, all knowledge, past, present, and future. There is nothing that occurs that is without God's understanding and recognition. Even that is taking place in the wildlands of the earth, in the animal kingdom. He knows it all. So that's what he's describing here. One of them shall fall to the ground without your Father, verse 30, but the very hairs of your head are all numbered. So by comparison to, in essence, time and chance happening, in this case, in the natural world, he says, by contrast, the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Verse 31, fear you not, therefore, you are of more value than many sparrows. So this is just another piece of the puzzle as a confirmation that you, when God is working in your life for a reason, you cease to be just subject to dumb luck. There is purpose going on for everything that you experience in one way or another. He numbers every hair on your head. And every time you use a brush and some come out, he updates the count. James 4, verse 13. James 4, verse 13, go to now, ye that say, today or tomorrow, we will go into such a city and continue there a year and buy and sell and get gain. So, again, the Apostle James is inspired to say, you know, you and I can make our plans for what we're going to do tomorrow. Well, here's my agenda tomorrow. I've got this work to do, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that. That's all well and good, but what he's saying is, you have no idea what tomorrow's going to bring. But God does. Go now, ye that say, make all our plans, our schemes, and our intents, and our goals. Today, tomorrow, we will go into such a city, continue there a year, buy and sell and get gain, verse 14, whereas you know not what shall be on the morrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanisheth away. Here today and gone tomorrow is what James is saying. And then verse 15, for that you ought to say, and again, this is written to the church. This isn't written to the world. This is written to members of God's true church. That you ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or that. Now, there are some who take this too far because then they think this is an instruction about language that you should allow or not allow to come out of your mouth. No, it's about the orientation of the mind, not necessarily the verbiage that we choose to use. So there were some Pharisees in the church of the past who would say that I would be wrong. I would be violating this principle if I said, well, tomorrow I'm going to go to the store and then I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. Well, you should preface everything by saying, if the Lord will. And if you don't use those words, then somehow you're violating this principle. No, I'm not. It's understood. It's minimally understood in my mind, and it should be to all of the called of God, that we are absolutely subject to Him. We are subject to His will and purposes which He doesn't reveal to us. We could experience anything suddenly, unexpectedly. And we take that into consideration with all of the planning that we do. I don't have to say it every time I utter. God cares about the orientation of our mind, not necessarily, you know, this outward expression. So, I mean, sometimes I will do this, you know, God willing. I think I say that a fair amount. Probably some of you do too. God willing, I hope to do this or that or the other. It's always good just in our minds to remember we are subject to His will and the circumstances that He has planned either to do or to allow to occur. Whether we understand it or recognize it in advance, and we don't, or not. So we are talking about not being subject to dumb luck. Chance occurrence, which has no purpose, because everything that the people of God experienced then does have a purpose. Now, I think it's also true that sometimes we go too far trying to read into circumstances, like we're looking for a sign. And that's also a ditch that is easy for God's people to fall into. I encourage you not to do that. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. You know, we should be reflective about the things that we experience. I'm not denigrating that at all. But, you know, if you stub your toe, if you get up in the middle of the night and go to the bathroom and you stub your toe on a piece of furniture, you just sit there and think, well, what did I do wrong that God allowed? Maybe the only thing you did wrong is that you were walking in the dark. And maybe God didn't intervene to send you an angel or move the furniture out of the way so you wouldn't stub your toe. He lets you suffer that. So if you want to look for a reason from God, fine. But it's very, very possible that was the lesson from God is, you know what? You have it within your capacity physically to take care of yourself better. And I didn't save you from that. Not because you're doing things that are majorly unpleasing to me, and therefore I'm striking you with a lightning bolt through your toe. It could be he just let us suffer a natural phenomenon. In other words, to anyone else in the world, it would have been dumb luck. And maybe for you and me, it was also, in essence, dumb luck. It's just God did not choose to intervene and give you a special blessing. He lets you suffer the chance encounter with gravity and the forces of motion in the world. Now, maybe there's some other, higher thing going on. I'm not saying dismiss. Some of us are probably more inclined to be dismissive. That was probably me, especially when I was a teenager. And others who want to see an intervention of God in every single thing that they experience. And I think those are both ditches on the opposite side of the road. So I do think we need to take a balanced approach about how we look for God's will in the things that we experience. Because there are lessons. And I will emphasize again, you are not subject to time and chance because of who you are in the plan of God right now. So it is good to be reflective. What can seem like chance to us, I'm going to put it this way, is either instigated by God or permitted by God for reason. And again, like stubbing your toe in the dark, it could be he just permitted it. He did not intervene one way or the other. He didn't cause it. He didn't set you up to do it. He also didn't save you from it. He let that chance encounter with a coffee table occur. It's still something he permitted, showing you that he could have intervened, but he didn't. Or it might be something that God actually instigates. It might be something that God instigates. So wisdom says we need to have a basis for making those evaluations. Hebrews 12, verse 5. I'm going to read verse 5 all the way through verse 10. Because here's another passage inspired through the apostle that speaks about God's intervention as for his dear children in correcting them, taking an active part of your life, not just leaving you like a child growing up as a weed. Hebrews 12, verse 5, and you have forgotten the exhortation which speaks unto you as unto children. My son, he calls us, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens, and scourges every son whom he receives. Which is just another way of saying, if you're called by God, he takes an active part in your life. Verse 7, if you endure chastening, which is correction, God deals with you as with sons, for what son is he whom the Father chastens not? Verse 8, if you be without chastisement, whereof are all partakers, then are you bastards and not sons. So the apostle was inspired by the Holy Spirit to make this comparison to the way human beings view one children that they love versus ones they don't care about. And one who's born out of wedlock, not a part of the family and is an inconvenience, not raised, not loved, and certainly not raised, is a bastard. And so we are told here that God treats us as his beloved children, which means he takes an active part to correct us and to guide us and to help us learn to put away bad habits and learn to think and to do the right things and avoid the wrong things. And if he didn't love you, he would treat you as a bastard, which means do whichever you want because I don't care. Now, what's really bad is if we in the church raise our children like bastards. I'm not getting into child rearing, but it's a thing. And if you have a tendency not to correct your children because it's inconvenient or bothersome to you or for whatever reason, you don't feel well equipped to do it, you're treating your children like bastards, just saying. God doesn't treat us that way. He takes an active part with his children. Just to reconfirm, you're not subject to time and chance. In the hands of God, you're dealing with an active parent. I'm not going to call God a helicopter parent, but he's everywhere. And he is doing and allowing everything for your ultimate good to be born into the family of God. Now think of that, because I've made this statement before that God either permits or instigates. But you know, a wise parent does the same thing. Does a wise parent always protect a child from harm? If you say yes, well, you're probably truly a helicopter parent. One event that I remember was one of my children, who will remain nameless. I told him and told him repeatedly, stay away from the stairs. This was probably in a child rearing sermon years ago. People remind me of things I say and I forget it. And he wouldn't learn. He kept going for the stairs. Now, they were carpeted. And it was only a flight of about 5 or 6 steps before it got to a landing. Over and over, don't get near the stairs, because he always wanted to go head first. It's like, whatever. Finally, I'm like, okay, let him go. And sure enough, he went head first, tumble down the stairs. Wah! I let that happen. I don't know if Mom, who was more loving, would have done that, but I let it happen. Because to me, that was a way to finally teach him what he was not willing to learn by my admonition. And guess what he did? And he never did that again. He went down the stairs, but he always turned around and went feet first. He never tried to go head first down the stairs. Lesson learned. Lesson learned. So there was an example of a parental teaching permitted, not instigated, is what I would say. And I would just tell you that this is the way God deals with us too. Some of his purposeful intervention in our lives might be hands off, because he intentionally chooses to let us do what we're going to do our way and suffer the penalty for it as a way to teach us the lesson. That is very different from people in the world being subject to dumb luck. Because for them, for the most part, God is letting them do what they're doing. He's not teaching or training them. He's letting them write experiences. But for you, if he goes hands off and lets you suffer the same thing that the world does, which seems like dumb luck, for you it's not dumb luck. It's part of the training. For now, the world is being treated by God as bastards. Now, they're not. Every human being is a beloved child of him, but he's not training them yet. He's not intervening directly in their lives yet, which means, according to this standard in Hebrews 12, he's actually treating them like bastards. The day is coming when he will treat them as a beloved child and intervene to teach dynamically, according to his perfect will. Isaiah 46, verse 1. Isaiah 46, verse 1, Baal boweth down. We're talking about pagan gods now, idolatrous gods. Baal boweth down, Nebo stoopeth. Their idols were upon the beast and upon the cattle. Your carriages were heavy loaden. They are a burden to the weary beast. They stoop, they bow down together. They could not deliver the burden, but themselves are gone into captivity. Verse 3, you'll see the context here. I just wanted to give you that background as we get to the main gist here. Verse 3, hearken unto me, O house of Jacob, God says. Hearken unto me, O house of Jacob, and all the remnant of the house of Israel, which are born by me from the belly, which are carried from the womb. What's the point? The house of Israel, in antiquity, is the type of the church, spiritual Israel. And now you're talking about beloved children. And he's saying, here's another manifestation, an expression of God, where he's saying, I intentionally brought you forth. So when you're begotten of the Holy Spirit, when you respond to his call in baptism, then we're talking about the initiation, a spiritual begettal, which hopefully is going to lead to a birth in the family of God. And God is taking an active part in that all along the way. He says it here. All the remnant of the house of Israel, which are born by me from the belly. We're talking about the active volition of God. We're not talking about time and chance. Which are carried from the womb. Verse 4, and even to your old age, I am he. Well, you're God, but what? No, he's not just saying I'm God. He's saying I'm the God who intervened in your life. To your old age. When you're mine. Even to your old age, I am he, the one intervening, like it or not. And even to hoar hairs will I carry you, even to your gray hair, all the way through. You're saying you can't escape him. He's there, and he's intervening. You are not subject to time and chance if you're in this category, if you're called Israel. He says, I have made, I will bear, even I will carry, and will deliver you. So go on, you can read it all the way through verse 10. Well, let me drop down to verse 9. He says, remember the former things of old, for I am God, there is none else. I am God, and there is none like me, declaring the end from the beginning, and from ancient times the things that are not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand, and I will do all my pleasure. A confirmation of the concept of the omniscience of God. He knows the end from the beginning, past, present, and future. If you stumble at the idea that God knows what's going to happen in the future, you need to go back and study the doctrine of this idea of free moral agency. God created you and me and all human beings as free moral agents. You have the right to choose. You are not automatons. That is not contradicted in any way by the fact that God knows what you're going to choose to do with your free moral agency and mine. Now, these worldwide ministers in the 70s came in their greater intellect and their scholarly ability to get hung up on this idea and to say that, well, if God knows what I'm going to do, then I'm not a free moral agent. No. The fact that God knows what you're going to freely choose to do does not change the fact that you were free to choose. His advanced knowledge of all actions of human beings has nothing to do with the fact that you have the right to choose. And when you choose, it's your choice. This kicks into the head this occult, carnal idea of fate. We're going to talk about that in a moment. Fatalism, the idea, and this is a part of the Muslim belief, by the way, you know, that we're just automatons carrying out a role that's already predetermined. Therefore, you can't change, I can't change. You're just going along. So whatever you do, good or bad, was already written in the stars. Not true. God did not create you on a train track that cannot deviate. You were created to make choice. Which is why he told Israel, I set before you life and death, choose. Was he just lying, shining them on, or was that real? Yeah, it's real. However, he still knows, before you and I even make it, what choice you're going to act upon. Still your choice. So you need to get your heads around that. If that's a hang up for you, you need to get through that study and become comfortable with your free moral agency and God's omniscience. Not the topic, only as far as to say we are not talking about dumb luck. We're not talking about a chance happening like in the world. Proverbs 16, verse 33. Proverbs 16, 33. The lot is cast into the lap, but the whole disposing thereof is of the Lord. Okay, that's a little awkward in the King James. New Living Translation says it this way. We may throw the dice, but the Eternal determines how they fall. Which is just saying, in the end, God is working out his purpose and his will. The end of all things in the plan of God for the human family is not just dumb luck. There is purpose. But the will of a purposeful God could allow the dice just to fall the way they're going to fall. He might intervene, or he might not. You see, all those are tools in the toolbox of God. It's still according to his purpose, whether he puts his thumb on the scale or whether he doesn't, but all things are working according to his will and purpose in the big picture. In that regard, there is no luck involved. We may throw the dice, but the eternal determines how they fall. With all of that in mind, how can you and I best think and speak about this concept of blessing or curse versus the elements of chance in the world? How do you and I process that and then use that for our benefit? Mr. Cole, I remember him talking, it periodically would come up in conversation, did not like the word fortunate. But he also didn't know how not to use it. I remember that. And maybe even it was in certain sermons may come across where he would use the word fortunate and then he would do a sidebar and say, you know, I wish there was another word. But in the English, in order to convey what he was trying to, it's difficult not to use the word. Here's a dictionary definition in the English of the word fortunate, or fortuitous is another way to speak about the concept. Fortunate is one having unexpected good fortune or lucky. Okay, I've already talked about luck as a synonym for chance. And in this regard, it's saying the word fortunate is another way to talk about good luck, or a positive accident of chance. Another definition is coming by good luck or favorable chance, bringing some good thing not foreseen as certain. And this is really how that, now what is true is that the word fortunate does have an occult origin. But how much of our vocabulary is like that? If you think you're going to root out use of every word in the English or any other language that doesn't have some occult origin that comes out of a false concept of human beings, and you're going to have to stop speaking. Because a lot of it is filtered with false concept. And yet we do use the language. I would just tell you there are some words that we shouldn't use because they mean one thing and one thing only. Like giving credit to a false god for a blessing or a curse. And if that's what the word fortunate meant in modern English, then I would say we shouldn't use it. But as this dictionary definition shows, it very often has come to mean simple luck, chance, favorable chance, without relevance to the intervention of some being pulling the strings. It just happened on its own, with no attribution. I spent my time trying to think of Mr. Cole's challenge. Okay, is there another word? I mean, he had a vocabulary widely above mine. But if I were to try to find a word that's better than fortunate, because it takes away kind of the occult origin of fortune telling, and the idea of a unseen power blessing that's not the real God. Here's my word, happenstance. Happenstance, which is a combination, I looked this up in the dictionary too, of the word happen and circumstance. That's really what it means. It's something that happens by circumstance, which I think very well captures the idea of something that happens by chance. Does not speak to the involvement of some power of man or God. It just talks about an event which occurs without attribution. Happenstance. Happenstance is not easy to use. There is the problem. Happens. Here's the definition officially of happenstance: a chance or random event or circumstance. That's what we're talking about. And by the way, I think that goes right back to Ecclesiastes 9. That's exactly what that word pega that Solomon was inspired to use is speaking of, isn't it? A chance, time and chance happens to them all. A random event or circumstance. Total randomness. Here's another definition of happenstance. The chance or random quality of an event or circumstance. A random quality. You can't attribute it to a purposeful intent of a being, human or spirit. God, angel, man, none of that's involved. It's just the way something happened. Happenstance. So again, I've already confirmed that's a real thing. Happenstance does occur, just not to the people of God. Since time and chance does happen in the world, it's not wrong to consider it or to speak about it. So don't be a Pharisee. But if you understand the difference now in God's dealing with his people, as opposed to what he is allowing to occur by happenstance, by chance in the world, hopefully it gives you a foundation on which to make these choices in your thinking, let alone in your choice of words. And guess what? Well, let's turn to Galatians 6, verse 7 and 8. I want to address this point. Since time and chance does happen in the world, it's not wrong to consider it or speak about it. And here now we want to look at your ability to influence what happens. And there's a lot of people who will, you know, they experience things and they take no responsibility for it. That's one of the ditches on the road. Something bad happened. Well, it wasn't my fault. It was just bad luck. Galatians 6, verse 7 says, "Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man sows, that shall he also reap." All right, so in part, here's a godly principle which says, what goes around comes around. Solomon also said, cast your bread upon the water, and after many days it will come back to you, which is another way of saying what goes around comes around. So you and I do make choices to do or not to do certain things, and it does have ramifications. So by making good choices in what we say or do, or bad choices in what we say or do, or choose not to do, there is a cause and effect that is going on. And again, according to the perfect will of God, he just may allow those circumstances to play out without doing anything about it. Because it's good for you and me to actually learn that. The book of Proverbs is full of admonitions of wisdom to tell us how we should speak and how we should think, and when we should keep our mouth closed and when we should open it, and how we should speak when we do. A soft answer turns away wrath. That's good advice, isn't it? So what happens if you respond to a provocation? Somebody gets in your face and unloads on you, and now you have a choice. I have a choice. Well, you can't treat me that way. Let me get back in your face because you deserve it. Or we follow the biblical wisdom and we contain ourselves and reply instead in a quiet, respectful way. And God then enumerates that, not always, but many times, a quiet reply will actually soothe the contentious situation. If we have the wisdom to do it. Now, does that mean if you don't, that God's going to intervene to keep you from being harmed? No. If you turn on getting in somebody else's face, he may let you suffer the ramifications for that. There's a choice. And there's learning in both regards. There's learning in both regards, good and bad, if we will. Whatsoever a man sows, that he also shall reap. Verse 8, for he that sows to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption. The end result of doing what comes natural to human minds is death. But he who sows to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. So there's lessons in everything that we experience, good and bad, and how we reply to those circumstances. So I'm going to put that under the heading of hard work, because it's hard work to control our own tongues. Hard work and effort is required. God will often bless according to our use of wisdom and resourcefulness. And so there's another old adage which bears out. Work as if it's up to you, but have faith because it's up to God. It's an acknowledgement of God's overall management of your life and your circumstances. But it does not discount the importance of your individual effort in your salvation process. There are some who would say, well, I'm the called of God. I just stand back and let God do everything. That would be foolish. He wants us to act within the bounds of our authority, our responsibilities. Knowing where those boundaries are often is one of the biggest challenges that we encounter. But that's also part of the learning. Because if you step across a God-given boundary and you get smacked for it, okay, lesson learned. Hopefully, lesson learned. If you stay within your boundary, even at great self-restraint, and you receive something good because of it, reinforce the principle. Reinforce the lesson. That's also helpful. And all of that is under this umbrella of God's active direction in your life. Whether he acts or whether he withholds acting. It's all part of his teaching and his training. Romans 2, verse 11. Because here's my favorite text that speaks about people in the world, not yet called by God, and the lessons that they're learning, in some cases, even though they do not have an open mind to value the Ten Commandments and the statutes and the judgments. Here the Apostle Paul was inspired to write in verse 11 of Romans 2, "There is no respect of persons with God. For as many as have sinned without the law also shall also perish without the law, and as many have sinned in the law shall be judged by the law. For not the hearers of the law are just before God, but under the doers of the law shall be justified." What does that have to do with anything? All to set us up for verse 14. For when, here's an elaboration on this principle that God's not a respecter of persons, the timing of when he calls them is different, but it doesn't mean he doesn't love the uncalled as much as he loves the one that he has called now. It's just not their perfect time. Verse 14, but when the Gentiles, those are the ones cut off from God for now, when the Gentiles are the uncalled for the time being, which have not the law, they can read the law, but they don't have it in the same way that one who's called by God has it. Meaning now God touches you and affects your mind so that you start to care about it. They don't have that. But we're talking about a classification of uncalled people who do respect certain aspects of the law of God. When the Gentiles, the uncalled, which have not the law by spiritual calling, do by nature the things contained in the law. What would that include? How about somebody in the world who comes to recognize that principle? A soft answer turns away wrath. There are some people in the world who actually believe that. I've known some who are pretty well contained, better than some I've known in the church, who are more apt to actually respond in a contentious situation with an act to create peace rather than throw gasoline on the fire. And I highly respect that. Can't happen among worldly people. Not as much anymore. As we get closer to the end of this age, we're seeing a ramp up more and more violence, animosity, antagonism, and hatred. But there are still vestiges sometimes with an individual not called by God who has come to recognize as a personal choice and behavior that I am better off when I act this way than when I act the other way. And you see him trying to apply it. When the Gentiles, which have not the law, they don't have a calling yet, do by nature, not by the inspiration of God, but literally by making choices of what they see in their physical environment, they do by nature things contained in the law. These, having not the law, not yet being called, are a law unto themselves. What? Because they're making up their own rules? We're talking about those who respect certain aspects of the law of God and have made them their own, part of their own creed of behavior, or, a conscious choice of behavior. And guess what? Now, because they're not called by God yet, is it not going to do them any good? It does do them good. To the extent that a human being, even uncalled, avoids violating one of the laws of God, they are better off by their obedience, even if they don't understand the source of it. So there are human beings in this world who make better lives for themselves because they choose a path which more aligns with principles of God than do others who totally ignore them. You see that in the world. It is possible for worldly people to some extent to do it. They cannot understand it spiritually. They are not going to understand the spiritual dimension that Christ came and magnified, like in Matthew chapter 5. They don't get that. But they may make their lives better in the flesh because they adhere to a code of respect, of honesty, of caring for others, of service as opposed to selfishness. And by doing that, as God says through Paul here, they in essence make the laws of God their own and they become blessed by it. Verse 15, which show the work of the law written in their hearts. You're talking, they actually show the results of obedience by what happens to them. Their conscience also bearing witness, and their thoughts the meanwhile accusing or else excusing one another. Making personal choices in their interactions with other individuals, and to the extent that they follow some of those wise principles from the book of Proverbs, they're better off than people who ignore it. So my point in relationship to this idea of chance, happenstance, luck, even if someone in the world is not yet receiving God's active intervention in their life, it doesn't mean that they can't have good things occur by their choices. They can have fewer curses and more blessings, quote unquote, by virtue of adhering to certain principles, which are a part of God's law, whether they recognize it as associated with God or not. You still get the results, even if you accidentally follow a principle of God. For them, it's happenstance. It's good luck or good fortune, because they're not doing it with the intent of fulfilling the intent of a purposeful God who said, do this and not that. They've just come to recognize a principle which makes their lives better when they follow it. For them, it's luck. It is, however, still rooted and an underlying principle which God made a part of the fabric of the existence upon this earth, both in nature as well as interaction with other human beings, even without God's divine intervention. So when people of this world obey principles of God's law, even by chance, they receive the benefit. So for you and me, the challenge is, be careful not to believe that we are subject to time and chance or fate. What is fate, or this fatalism? Fatalism is, again, this idea that we are beings created by some form of deity that's on this railroad track which cannot be changed. That is absolutely a lie. That's a lie of Satan the devil, by the way. It makes you attempt to make you and me think there's nothing that I can do that's a free choice. I'm hardwired to either end up here or to end up there, and nothing I do is going to change my outcome because God made me a robot. You are not subject to fate. So that's a term. Fatalism and the idea of fate is something we absolutely should keep out, I would say, of our vocabulary as it applies to our thinking about ourselves. You're not subject to fatalism. The supposed force or principle or power absolutely is in the hands of God, and He is an active, dynamic being. So until God intervenes to achieve a specific purpose, there is an element of chance, happenstance, I'm going to call it, happy accident. And it is real in this universe, cause and effect. Yes, it all results according to how you come into contact with the laws of God, physical or spiritual. But human beings or other things happen without a pre-planning. God just set all of these laws in motion, and they work on autopilot. And you and I can either receive good things or bad things physically in the world according to how we bump up against these laws. That's what the world's experience. But once God intervenes to call you, and as you are now a student in His school, that ceases to be totally at random. God is accomplishing His definite will through every event, and He knows the end from the beginning. So understanding how to think about chance, luck, fortune, happenstance, in relationship to the volition of God to bless or to curse, actually gives power to God's people in allowing you to evaluate all of the experiences that you are subjected to.
The Church of God the Eternal has just presented Blessing versus Chance, a message by Mr. John Brisby in Eugene, Oregon, December 2nd, 2023.